Have you ever felt that relentless drive for productivity at work? That feeling that it often comes at the expense of your own well-being?
Or maybe the opposite, that focusing too much on well-being might actually slow down progress.
Exactly. It's this tension, right?
Yeah.
A feeling many of us deal with daily, like you constantly have to choose one over the other.
It's a common dilemma.
Well, today we're doing a deep dive that really challenges that whole assumption. We're looking at this intriguing piece by Leo Bottari in CEO World.
Yes, Productivity and Employee Well-Being, Two Sides of the Same Coin, Part 1. Great title.
It really is. And our mission here is to unpack how strategies that were initially designed for these elite business leaders, how they're now revealing this profound connection, almost symbiotic, actually.
Between high performance and genuine employee mental health.
Precisely. We're going to explore how these two goals, which seem so distinct, maybe don't just coexist. Maybe they actually reinforce each other.
Creating workplaces that are, you know, both really strong and sustainable.
So, to kick us off, let's trace the author's journey a bit. Leo Bottari, he started his research really focused on understanding the dynamics of the world's top CEO forums.
Right. His initial goal was purely business-centric. What makes these peer advisory groups tick? How can other business leaders copy that success?
It was all about that elite-level strategy, executive growth.
And what truly stood out, almost accidentally, was how that very focused research led to this entirely unintended but really powerful discovery.
Which was?
Well, the author realized that while his work wasn't originally meant for applying these ideas to, say, organizational teams inside companies, the effectiveness of this peer-driven approach in just everyday businesses became, as he puts it, crystal clear.
So it wasn't just for the C-suite.
Exactly. It quickly became obvious these high-level insights were, well, pretty much universally applicable, not exclusive at all.
Okay, so this is where the story takes a turn then.
The pivotal one, yeah. Because when organizations adopt these principles, they start to look like what Dave Logan and John King call life is great. Mm-hmm. Cultures in their book, Tribal Leadership.
Life is great cultures.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean in practice? Is it just about perks?
No, not just superficial stuff. These are genuinely exceptional, high-performing places. They're built on some fundamental things.
Like what?
Like genuinely understanding what hiring the right people really means. Actively promoting psychological safety, not just tolerating it, but using it to enhance productivity.
Okay.
And fostering a healthy culture of accountability, but led by servant leaders, you know?
Right. Accountability, it's about growth, not punishment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the outcome for these organizations is pretty remarkable. They end up setting their own standards of excellence.
And they, what was the phrase? Proactively create an even larger gap between themselves and everyone else.
That's the one.
Yeah.
They're not just competing anymore. They're basically redefining the game.
Wow. And this approach, this specific way of building teams, it has a name, right?
Yeah. Yes. Peer innovation. It's a neat blend, isn't it? Peer, meaning people of equal standing.
And innovation, creativity realized.
Right. So peer innovation, as the author defines it, is a carefully selected, diverse collection of people with a common purpose and shared values work together to make each other better and create something larger than themselves.
Okay, breaking that down. Carefully selected, diverse, common purpose, shared values. Sounds like a lot goes into setting it up right.
Absolutely. It's intentional. It's about harnessing that inherent power peers have to drive collective growth and innovation, moving beyond just top-down direction.
So the real genius here is realizing that strong horizontal peer support isn't just like a nice-to-have for morale.
Precisely. It's the fundamental bedrock. It allows your whole organizational structure, the vertical part, to stand tall and be resilient, even when things get tough.
What happens horizontally in your company gives its vertical structure strength. I like that.
It's a powerful idea.
It really is, that horizontal relationship layer strengthening the vertical. But it sounds like a pretty significant cultural shift, too.
Oh, definitely.
For leaders trying to actually implement this, what are some of the common, maybe, pitfalls or resistances you've seen when trying to foster this peer innovation level? It seems like it needs a real mindset change.
You're absolutely right, it does. And that's often the first hurdle. One of the biggest challenges is just moving past that ingrained hierarchical thinking, you know, where innovation and direction have to flow top down.
Leaders might not want to give up control.
Exactly. They might resist empowering peer groups, fearing a loss of authority, or maybe even efficiency, ironically.
Mm. What else?
Another common pitfall is maybe misunderstanding that carefully selected part you highlighted. It's not just about throwing people together randomly.
Right.
It needs intentional curation. You need diverse skills, but also those shared values to avoid things like groupthink or worse, internal competition.
Makes sense.
And maybe the most critical thing, a lack of psychological safety can just kill it before it even starts. If peers don't feel safe enough to challenge ideas, to innovate, maybe even to fail together sometimes, well, the whole thing just breaks down.
Those are really important points to consider. Okay, so that was the first unintended outcome, the application to teams.
Right.
But the author's discovery journey didn't stop there, did it? He later found a second, maybe equally significant, unintended outcome.
That's right. How these peer-driven workplace cultures inherently influence employee well-being, specifically mental health.
Which is incredibly relevant now. I mean, there's such a heightened global focus on employee mental health, something we've all seen ramp up, especially after the pandemic.
Absolutely. It's front and center now in a way it wasn't before.
Okay, let's unpack this shift a bit then. It really makes you think about that older executive mindset, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Not that long ago, it felt pretty common to hear things like, look, the bottom line is what matters. If employees can't handle the stress, maybe they're just not cut out for this industry.
Or, we're not therapists here. Productivity comes from focus, discipline, not from catering to feelings.
Right. What was it about that time, do you think, that made that kind of rigid bottom line only view so prevalent, even when maybe intuitively it didn't feel quite right?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I think it was deeply rooted in that sort of industrial age mentality. Work was seen as purely transactional.
Show up, do the task, get paid.
Exactly. Emotions, personal struggles, general well-being. Those were considered personal issues, things to be dealt with outside work because they were seen as, well, detracting from efficiency.
Distractions.
Pretty much. And there was also that strong belief in rugged individualism, right? Resilience meant just enduring stress silently.
Without complaining.
Yeah. The whole idea that a company had some responsibility for an employee's mental state was almost alien, largely because that link between mental health and actual business outcomes wasn't widely understood or accepted by leadership then.
It was seen as soft. Maybe not strategic.
Precisely. Soft, not strategic.
And that's where the author himself had this realization, this kind of aha moment.
A significant one, yes. Interestingly, what happened was, while Bouteri had written, you know, several books, hundreds of articles on peer innovation's impact.
On things like engagement, alignment.
Learning and development, all that. He hadn't actually fully explored its potential influence on employee mental health.
Huh. A blind spot.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
And this particular blind spot was actually pointed out to him by one of his Canadian team members. It happened during a Peer Innovation Certified Facilitator meeting.
A direct challenge or observation?
More of an observation that sparked something. It was a clear aha moment for him, apparently. Connecting dots he just hadn't formally mapped out before.
And intuitively, these connections, they make so much sense now, don't they?
Totally. I mean, we've kind of always believed, haven't we, that if employees feel a real sense of belonging, that's naturally going to counteract being in a toxic or isolating place.
Stands to reason.
And when accountability is actually designed to show people they matter, to foster growth.
Yeah.
Instead of just being about control or punishment.
Yeah.
It just seems bound to reduce workplace stress and anxiety, right?
Yeah.
Those things don't really contribute to long-term health or productivity anyway. We know that now.
So the intuitive understanding was maybe there.
Exactly. But the formal concept of workplace psychological health and safety, that wasn't really in his, as he calls it, thought leadership wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been focused on driving higher performance.
Without explicitly tying it to mental well-being.
Right. Until that conversation sparked the connection.
And it's really, as you said, no coincidence that it was a Canadian team member who sparked this. Huh. Canada's actually been a global leader here. They made this huge leap back in 2013. Became the very first country to introduce a national standard for workplace psychological health and safety. PHS, they call it.
It's quite remarkable. They were really ahead of the curve, formalizing these ideas before many others.
So connecting this to the bigger picture then,
yeah.
Canada standard, it's built around these 13 psychosocial factors.
That's right, 13 specific factors. And they aren't just some random checklist. They really form this interconnected ecosystem.
Going beyond just physical safety.
Way beyond. Delving into those deeper, often invisible things that have a massive impact on an employee's mental state and overall well-being.
Okay, maybe walk us through a few key ones, just to get a sense of the scope.
Sure. Well, you've got organizational culture. And it's not just buzzwords, right? It's about fostering a workplace genuinely built on trust, honesty, fairness. the real bedrock.
Crucial.
Then, closely linked, is civility and respect. Promoting respectful, considerate interactions. Preventing that daily grind of microaggressions that just wears people down.
Absolutely.
Then there's psychological and social support, which means supervisors and colleagues actually respond appropriately when mental health concerns come up instead of just dismissing them.
That's huge. What else stands out?
Well, involvement and influence is interesting. It's about including employees in discussions about their work, decisions that affect them, giving them a voice, a sense of ownership.
Sounds a bit like peer innovation itself.
It really resonates, doesn't it? And critically, things like workload management, making sure tasks and responsibilities are actually achievable in the time available, preventing that chronic overwhelm and burnout.
Yeah, that's a big one for many people.
And the full list covers even more. Clear leadership, growth opportunities, recognition, balance, psychological protection. It paints a really comprehensive picture of what a psychologically healthy workplace actually looks like.
It is incredibly comprehensive, but I can imagine some listeners, maybe managers or execs, thinking, okay, this sounds like a lot of work. 13 factors.
Mm-hmm.
How do you convince, say, a purely profit-driven board that investing in all this isn't just a cost center, but a critical investment? It's easy to talk about well-being, maybe harder to budget for it.
That really is the core challenge, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And the conversation needs to shift from cost to return on investment.
How so?
Well, the research is increasingly clear. Neglecting these factors leads directly to higher absenteeism, presenteeism, you know, people being physically present, but mentally checked out and unproductive.
Right. Just going through the motions.
Exactly. Plus, higher turnover, lower quality work. These things have real costs.
Okay.
Conversely, organizations that actively nurture these 13 factors, they see better engagement, higher productivity, lower stress-related health costs, much stronger talent retention.
So it's not just moral, it's strategic.
Absolutely. It's about showing that a healthy, thriving workforce isn't just the right thing to do, it's a significant competitive advantage. It directly impacts the bottom line by cutting costs and boosting output.
And you notice how many of those factors you mentioned, like psychological support, civility and respect, involvement and influence, how they seem to connect directly back to that horizontal peer-driven dynamic of peer innovation.
That's precisely it. That's why the author's sort of accidental discovery holds such profound promise. The pieces start to fit together.
It certainly seems that way. And inspired by Canada's standards, the author has now pivoted, hasn't he, to a new critical question, bringing his two unintended outcomes together.
Yes, in a really fascinating way. This raises this really important question. Is it possible that peer innovation, which remember, is aimed squarely at building higher performing teams using principles from elite groups, could it also positively affect all 13 of those psychosocial factors in Canada's standard? Just inherently.
So the hypothesis is?
The core idea he's exploring now is basically this. Does it imply that if you pursue higher levels of productivity properly?
Properly being the key word there.
Absolutely. If you do it properly, could it also reduce stress and improve employee mental health?
That really flips the traditional narrative, doesn't it? Productivity driving well-being, not undermining it.
Completely flips it. He's planning to dive deeper using AI assistance, bringing in research from the American Psychological Association, Mental Health America.
And the findings are coming in part two of his article.
That's the plan, yeah, to really test this hypothesis.
Okay, so the idea, productivity can drive well-being. It truly turns conventional thinking on its head. But isn't there still a risk?
How do you mean?
Well, in pursuing higher levels of productivity properly, couldn't organizations still, maybe inadvertently, push employees too hard, especially if that definition of properly isn't super carefully maintained or measured? It feels like a very delicate balance.
It absolutely is a delicate balance, and that's precisely the nuance that needs exploring. That keyword properly is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Right.
If properly means implementing peer innovation in a way that genuinely prioritizes psychological safety, healthy accountability, supportive peer connections, then yes, the hypothesis looks really promising.
Wow.
But if it's just a superficial adoption, you know, using some elements, but still driving unsustainable demands underneath, then yeah, the risk is definitely still there.
So his further research needs to dig into those distinctions.
Undoubtedly. How organizations can actually achieve this synergy without just falling back into the old, potentially harmful patterns.
Okay. So, as we wrap up this part of the deep dive, the core takeaway feels quite profound. We've traced this journey, right, from optimizing elite CEO forums.
All the way to this remarkable realization that high-performance cultures, if built on principles like peer innovation, might just inherently create these environments of deep psychological safety and well-being.
It's such a powerful shift from that old mindset, the either productivity or well-being trade-off.
Towards a much more compelling both-and possibility.
And this leaves us with a really provocative thought, doesn't it? If creating these genuinely life-is-great cultures at work inherently leads to both peak productivity and better mental well-being, what kind of fundamental shift might that require in how organizations approach their goals, how they move beyond that traditional either-or thinking?
Imagine that world, right, where pursuing excellence and cultivating human flourishing aren't competing forces, but are actually inextricably linked.
What would that mean for how you work? For how your team thrives? Something to definitely think about.